Rose Aguilar, and this is your call. Democratic Representative Adam Schiff and Republican Steve Garvey secured the top two spots in the U.S. Senate race and will face off in November. Adam Schiff spent more than $12 million on commercials propping up Garvey, according to the Wall Street Journal. At last night's victory speech, he was interrupted by Jews for Ceasefire, Jewish Voice for Peace, and allies chanting Ceasefire Now. Representatives Katie Porter and Barbara Lee came in a distant third and fourth. They will no longer be serving in the House next year. We will discuss that race later in the show. California's Proposition 1, which would authorize $6 billion in bonds to build mental health treatment facilities for those with mental health and substance abuse challenges and provide housing for homeless people, is slightly favored to pass, but it is still too close to call. In San Francisco last night, Mayor London Breed and her allies were celebrating with the almost passage, but now we know that Props E and F did pass. Prop E will allow the San Francisco Police Department to engage in more high-speed chases and permit drone use in pursuits. And Prop F will require people who receive cash benefits to undergo drug screening. If they are found to be using illegal drugs, they would be mandated to undergo drug treatment if they want to keep their benefits or housing, according to Mission Local. Progressives picked up two D triple seats, but lost by 21-3. So what races were you watching? How did you vote? What are your takeaways? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. Today we're joined by two guests, Joe Riva Noberos is senior editor at Mission Local. He and his team report that more than $11 million was spent on San Francisco's primary. Hi, Joe. Thanks for joining us again.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Darwin Bond Graham is news editor at the Oakland Side and former freelance investigative reporter covering police and prosecutorial misconduct. Hi, Darwin. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Well, I want to ask you both about turnout, which was extremely low. We are still waiting on the final numbers, but so far San Francisco is reporting that only 21% of voters came out. Darwin, in Alameda, it's only 8%. Alameda County, I should say. That is low.
Yeah, it's pretty low. I mean, you know, primaries are always, they always see pretty low turnout, but this is especially low this time.
What explains that? Have you been talking to people over the last couple months about why they decided to vote or not vote?
I mean, a lot of people I know and who have I've talked to about, you know, whether or not they're voting. I think a lot of people got really engaged, you know, during the pandemic. The state rolled out, of course, like, all these new ways. Alameda County Registrar also rolled out new ways to make voting a lot easier for people, including universal mail-in ballots and all that. But yeah, you know, it's not clear to me why this particular election people don't seem to be engaging as much. That said, there's still a lot of ballots left to be counted. So, you know, it's possible the turnout in Alameda County, that percentage will, like, you know, increase a little bit as they count some more of the ballots here.
What about you, Joe? What are your thoughts? Right now, San Francisco is reporting 21% voter turnout.
Yeah, lower, like Darwin said, primary elections are always lower. This is slightly lower than past years. At this time in 2022, it was about 26%, and then we eventually went up to 46. So we could easily see this double before we actually have the full results. It's still very low. I mean, across the board, across the city, some of the richer areas did have higher turnout, like Noe Valley, but across the board, people just did not come out to vote.
The Chronicle editorial board had a piece yesterday that said, based on the ballots that had been returned so far, it was mostly white, older, conservative voters. Do you think that's what we'll see by the time the rest of the ballots are counted, Joe?
Yeah, I mean, you know, especially early voters and especially primary elections tend to favor white, conservative homeowners, that kind of voter demographic. And that was exactly the worry from the progressives this time around, that some of the measures that were on the ballot in particular would draw out even more of those kinds of voters and therefore tank some of the other progressive measures and candidates on the ballot. So, I think we've already seen kind of the extent of that. Probably as more votes turn in, this will become more progressive, because progressives tend to vote later. But certainly they have, the kind of older, wider voting bloc has probably dominated this election.
Well, I have someone in my family, and I'm sure others can relate to this, who says, oh, my vote doesn't count. My one vote doesn't count. Well, I'm going to call that person after this show and say, take a look at the rent control measure in Larkspur. Because mm-hmm. right now, you can raise the rent in Larkspur 10% a year. This measure would bring it down to 7%, which to San Franciscans, that's really high because it's 3 in San Francisco. Well, guess what? That rent control measure in Larkspur is winning by 8 votes, 974 to 966. So, wow. Darwin, once in a while, we get something like this where it's, 8 votes. It just shows that every vote does count.
Yeah, every vote does count. Some of the spreads in Alameda County right now are pretty big. So there's not a ton of nail biters, but there's a few races where there's still candidates vying for second place to go to that runoff in November. And, they're only separated by maybe a couple thousand votes in some of those. When they count all the ballots, right? I mean, we got to say at the outset here that there's a bunch of ballots that just haven't been counted. So all the results that we have at this point are very preliminary. Right. But once they count all the ballots, some of these results could shift. And you could see some races where, the second place person wins by maybe a few hundred votes or 1,000 votes. That's a big deal, because that person gets to go on in November and, potentially win office.
Yeah, it's a good point. Joe, what are your thoughts about this? I mean, right now we've got Proposition 1, the mental health bill, is still too early to call. As Darwin said, we have to wait. I mean, right now it's at 50.2% yes, 49.8% no. And that's just with 50% of expected votes.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, the ballots that we'll get in will, in San Francisco at least, probably double. That race is far too close to call. There's Proposition A in San Francisco, which is just a hair's breadth above 2/3 needed to pass. That one is still too close to call. And then importantly for us, we have the Democratic Central County Committee, which has a whole slate of candidates. And because those races are just a few hundred votes makes a huge difference. That one could also shift pretty radically in the coming days.
And Prop A is the affordable housing measure?
That's right. The $300 million affordable housing measure, which was put on the ballot by Mayor Breed, but she did not do as much stumping and fundraising for it as Supervisor Aaron Peskin and as others had hoped. And she instead kind of focused on the police measure for car chases and surveillance, Proposition E, and then the drug screening measure, Proposition F. That's really where her funders went. And those are the ones that saw these kind of outsized donations this election season.
Darwin, given that you have done a lot of reporting on police, have you been following E and F in San Francisco?
Yeah, I've particularly been watching Measure E with a lot of interest, mainly because, there's just a lot of evidence that having policies that allow the police to engage in high-speed vehicle chases for things like, burglary, that you're gonna see a lot more police chases, you're gonna see a lot more collisions, and you're gonna see a lot more people getting hurt and dying. In crashes. And some of those people are going to be police officers. Some are going to be the suspects who are being chased. And some people are going to be bystanders. This is just a fact. And so I think the proposition that San Francisco voters have approved, the question essentially was asking people, is it worth it to kill and maim more people to potentially deter or prevent or catch people engaged in property crimes. And the voters seem to be saying yes, that they have more of an appetite for those kinds of injuries and deaths if it could possibly mean deterring or preventing those types of crimes.
Well, let's play a couple clips because these props are very important. Here is San Francisco Mayor London Breed addressing supporters of the measures she backed last night. She was with members of Grow SF, Together SF, and San Francisco Democrats for Change. We will ask Joe about these groups and their funders after we hear this clip. And thanks to KPIX for this clip.
And I just want to say Proposition E and F right now are leading. Proposition C is leading. And Supervisor Dorsey, Proposition B is losing.
So that's Mayor Breed at a celebratory event last night. Joe, can you first tell us, because you and your team have done very important reporting on the $11 million that's been flowing into San Francisco politics, tell us more about some of these groups, Grow SF, Together SF, San Francisco Democrats for Change.
Yeah, so Grow SF, Together SF, Abundant SF, you know, there's a kind of a coterie of groups that's a blank SF group. And over the last few years, they've become really ascendant since COVID, I'd say. And they are part of this interrelated money network that has a few, you know, a handful of wealthy donors kind of responsible for the bulk of the giving here. People like Chris Larson, Gary Tan from Y Combinator, Jeremy Liu, a venture capitalist, Ron Conway, who has long been involved in San Francisco's election giving. They fund nonprofits, they fund candidates directly, and they fund measures. And they are all pulling towards the right. So they are all, you know, they're huge proponents of the police chase measure, Proposition E, huge proponents of the drug screening measure, Proposition F. And like you said, they had a blowout last night and they were very celebratory.
I have to say, how should I put this? I mean, to cheer for a measure that gives police the power to engage in more high-speed chases, I mean, obviously, fine to support what you want, but to cheer for something like that, I mean, what do supporters of these props think is going to happen as a result? I mean, what is to cheer here?
You know, I mean, I think Darwin's right that giving officers discretion here will just result in more injuries. So that's the bottom line. The evidence is pretty clear on that. The Chronicle came out with a huge investigation just this last week ahead of the election that showed nationally most police departments have that kind of officer discretion, and it results in a ton of bystander victims, victims who are police officers, sometimes victims who are just innocent, you know, passengers, not usually the driver themselves. So charitably, I think that that supporters believe Proposition E will kind of free up the hands of officers to go after these property crimes that have just become dominant in San Francisco's media coverage and political rhetoric. But as Darwin mentioned, and as experts that we've talked to said, you know, the real result of this will probably be to increase collisions and fatal collisions. And I'm not clear that it's really a benefit to Breed or to the moderates in San Francisco to have this measure passed, especially for November. You know, it only takes one kind of deadly accident, one child killed by an errant police vehicle to be blasted all across campaign flyers and TV ads by her opponents.
We should also mention, according to the Chronicle, Proposition E authorizes local police to use drones to pursue drivers suspected of felony crimes or violent misdemeanors without first getting supervisors' approval. Because this is such an important change, and as you both say, lives could potentially be at stake, we wanted to play this clip also. This is CRON4's Justine Waldman asking Mayor London Breed why she supports Prop E.
So Prop E, quickly here before we run out of time, would give the San Francisco Police Department more power and less oversight. That's sort of how it's of being plugged for the people who are against this. They're saying that they've made a lot of police reforms over the past few years, and this really chips away at that. Why do you support it?
Yeah, and that's not true about less oversight. And let's just talk about, you know, the pursuit policy. So right now, the police can only pursue when it's a violent felony. But in the middle of night, when these small businesses are being broken into and the police arrive on the scene, there's surveillance that shows a police officer arriving on the scene, watching the suspect come out of the location with things in their arms. The police can't even pursue them in the middle of the night because it's not a violent felony. Mm-hmm. And so from my perspective, we've gone too far and we've not made the adjustments for the challenges that we're experiencing. And we're saying they should be able to do it when safe to do so. The daytime is a different story because the daytime you have people out, you have folks out and about, and you want to make sure that we don't have pursuits in the daytime that could lead to private citizens being harmed by this. But that's where the technology comes in. That's where drones that could be used in these particular
cases. And they need approval from like the Board of Supervisors and the police commission in order to get that type of technology.
Right now, in order to use that type of technology, yes. And for example, we went through a process. It took 9 months to go through a process for surveillance technology access in the work that we have been doing in the Tenderloin to make arrests around drug dealing and violence and other things that many of the people who live in the Tenderloin have been asking us to deal with. And in fact, they made within a 3 month period 64 arrests, which included two homicide suspects because of the ability to use this technology. And our goal is public safety. Our goal is to use public safety and to use these tools responsibly. And more importantly, it does require that there's less time that police are doing a lot of redundant paperwork. And it also requires that the police commission has to communicate with the public about these changes, that they have to have a robust process before they make changes that potentially make us less safe. And I think that some of these policies that have been moved forward through criminal justice reforms, which I've been a leader on and I've pushed for, have in some cases gone too far and created more challenges for us around public safety. But despite that, we still have one of the lowest crime rates that we've had in 10 years, not including a global pandemic. And our officers and all the work that we've been doing has been having an impact, but that does not mean that we do business as usual. We need to make sure our officers have all the tools they need to be successful at combating crime in San Francisco.
San Francisco Mayor London Breed speaking there with Cron 4's Justine Waldman about why she's supporting Prop E. Right now, it's got almost 60% of the vote, 40% no. So first off, a lot of people are saying that this will give the police, there will be less oversight. London Breed says that is not true. Joe, what does the bill actually say?
Yeah, I mean, it does take away oversight from the police commission. I mean, that's written into the law, and it gives more power for the police chief to enact policy. So when she says, you know, this will just ensure that the police commission has to go to citizens to kind of hold these meetings before enacting policy, that's true. But those same requirements are then not imposed on the police chief. And so what experts said was that this effectively kind of kneecaps the police commission's policies, which might be more to the left of what the police chief might want, and allows the police chief to enact some changes more easily than kind of the oversight body here would be able to.
Darren, what did you think about Mayor London Breed's comments about how when there is a robbery taking place in the middle of the night, say downtown San Francisco, police are not able to chase those people, but now they will? She says they will not during the day when people are walking around.
Well, I don't even know if that comment's accurate. I mean, if a police officer witnesses someone committing a robbery, which is a violent felony, you know, I believe the San Francisco Police Department's policy is that they can pursue that person. Maybe they need permission to pursue them in a, you know, vehicle chase. But I hear this from, you know, I see police officers commenting in the East Bay about this a lot too, and they make these claims that I don't think are really accurate. I also just want to say I'm viewing this whole, you know, debate about you know, public safety and what police can and can't do and police reforms in San Francisco. I'm viewing it as someone who's, you know, lived and worked in a city for a while now that, well, for 20 plus years that has had a real actual police reform program in place. The Oakland Police Department's negotiated settlement agreement, which has been very effective at reforming the police, changing their policies. So the Oakland police have, you know, pretty restrictive chase policy and many other things in place that provably have reduced the loss of life during police pursuits, in terms of police use of force, things like that. And so I'm looking at San Francisco and I'm seeing a city that has never had anything remotely like that police reform agenda. I think the closest SFPD came to that was what the Department of Justice, investigation and report that came out, when was that, 2016 maybe. They had 94 findings, 272 recommendations about how to change SFPD, but then, you know, the DOJ withdrew from that essentially, and the California Department of Justice had to pick it up, and some sort of, it became this very voluntary kind of wishy-washy thing, and I don't think the reforms got very far. And remember, that was all in response to a string of very controversial police shootings in San Francisco. So I don't know that SFPD has ever actually been subject to a rigorous reform program, the type of which some politicians over there seem to be talking about and wanting to get away from at this point.
Well, if you have any questions or comments or would like to talk about how you voted on San Francisco's Prop E or F, the drug screening measure, which we'll talk about in a few minutes, you can give us a call, or really any of the measures. You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. We have an email from a listener who says, I was injured in late 2022 by a collision in a high-speed police chase of a stolen vehicle in San Francisco. I'm still dealing with the concussion and pain from this horrific event. On top of it, the police lied on the report and said they were no longer pursuing the car when multiple witnesses on the street saw otherwise. If the police had not been in a high-speed chase, I'd be healthy today, and my mom's car, which I loved dearly after she passed away, would still be with me. There are other ways to catch criminals without chasing them. Many innocent lives will be lost or permanently damaged by this law. Thank you for sharing that, and I'm so sorry to hear about your story and the fact that you're still dealing with pain from that. Joe, I mean, that's a horrific story, and one that people have shared with The Chronicle, for example. Cal Matters has a piece on this. I mean, it's getting a lot more media attention because of this.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, we had last year a deadly chase in the Mission, where a bystander waiting for the bus stop, a 54-year-old man, was killed by, it was a sheriff's deputy that time, chasing a stolen city car. Just a week later, we had a police SUV barrel into the storefront of an Italian deli here in the Mission, injuring a child and narrowly avoiding killing the child and the person who was holding him. So these things are deadly, and I believe it's 40% of SFPD chases result in some sort of injury. So these are, you know, this is not a hypothetical. Like, this does happen. And if officers' hands are unbound here, like, it's the math is on the wall there. Like, more injuries will likely occur.
Darwin, I know we have to let you go, but given that you cover these issues so extensively, especially police, what are your thoughts about what it will take to get to the root cause of crime?
Oh gosh. Well, that's what, right. That's the great political debate that's like still unfolding, you know, 4 years after the George Floyd protest. Right. I do think if you look at the election results from last night, in Alameda County, I think there's some, interesting things going on here. So we had, you know, one of our supervisors districts, District 5. So the County Board of Supervisors, right now are considering things around, you know, like, sheriff's oversight, and, they have to oversee the Santa Rita jail, which, you know, has, you know, its own consent decree because of abuses that happened there. So that the Board of Supervisors has a lot to deal with in terms of law enforcement oversight, and fighting crime. And so in one of those races, we see Nikki Fortunato Bass. She's the Oakland City Council president. She's someone who's staked her entire political career on the notion that the solution to crime and public safety problems is not simple. It's not more police. It's not more aggressive police chases. Yeah, you got to invest in police. You got to invest in policing and hire police and have a competent police force. But her whole message is it's you've got to pursue this more holistic approach to uplifting people's lives, eliminating poverty, providing housing, things like that, addressing root causes. And she, is the strong front runner according to these early results. And actually, the top three candidates in that field of candidates are all pretty similar. They're all progressives who view crime and public safety problems through that kind of holistic lens. The candidate in that race who ran on the more kind of law and order program of like, let's just hire more cops. Let's allow police pursuits, for example, things like that. Chris Moore, he's in fourth place. So there's, he's got about 11% of the vote in these early tallies. So there's a constituency here for that. But I mean, I think what we're seeing is that, this debate around public safety and what the right approach is and how to really prevent crime and prevent people from being harmed. We're seeing that play out. And I think there's just a lot of mixed things going on here. Yeah, like Prop E in San Francisco passed, showing that appetite for, loosening restrictions on the police to engage in more chases, use more surveillance. But again, across the Bay, Alameda County, we're seeing some different stuff playing out in who's leading the different campaigns over here for Board of Supervisors and other races.
Well, we'd love to have you back, Darwin, to continue this important discussion. Darwin Bond Graham is news editor at the Oakland Side and former freelance investigative reporter covering police. Thanks so much for joining us, Darwin.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Coming up after a break, we'll continue speaking with Joe Rivano-Barros, senior editor of Mission Local, about San Francisco results. He and his team report more than $11 million was spent on San Francisco's primary. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, Leah and Richard Rothstein will discuss their new book, Just Action, How to Challenge Segregation Enacted Under the Color of Law. They lay out a path for activists to challenge housing segregation and enact real change. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email us, yourcall@kalw.org. And if you'd like to join today's show about California's primary results, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Joe Rivano-Barros is senior editor of Mission Local. We'll spend about 10 more minutes talking about results out of San Francisco, and then we will talk about the Senate race. If you have any questions or comments, what were you watching? What are your takeaways? We'd love to hear from you. We have an email from Francesca. Francesca lives in the Mission, where she says crime, trash, encampments, open-air drug use is endemic. She writes, I voted no on F, but I think most people want police to have more resources to stop crime. Going to my local Walgreens and seeing people stealing without consequence is just dystopian. Seeing illegal vending all over my street is demoralizing. Rampant sex trafficking on Shotwell is unacceptable, where working class families are trying to raise their children. People have voted for change because the progressive policies that have been in place for the last 16 years have failed, period. We hear this a lot, Joe. What are your thoughts based on all the reporting you've done?
Yeah, I mean, it's clear that voters are extremely frustrated. And I think that the visible signs of poverty are much more visible since COVID. And that bothers people. And it bothers people to walk by homeless encampments and drug dealing. I think the question is, what kind of approach do you take to these social ills? Is it going to be a public health approach where you're emphasizing, harm reduction or recovery or kind of treating this addiction as an illness? Or is it going to be a punitive approach where you're trying to hold people personally responsible, punish them, and if not, to get your goals?
So far, San Francisco has had more appetite for the latter, it seems. And that's, you know, that's also not only, that's not a recent thing. I mean, I remember Prop Q, which was to sweep homeless encampments in the mid-2010s. You know, Care Not Cash before that in the mid-2000s. I mean, San Franciscans, despite kind of this reputation as being a progressive city and a liberal bastion, you know, have limited tolerance for homelessness, for drug use, for these kind of ills of poverty that we see in the city.
Well, and I hear what you're saying, Francesca. We're going to keep doing a lot of shows about this, obviously how we got here. There's just so many things to discuss about how we deal with these crises. Talking about another measure that San Francisco voters passed overwhelmingly is Measure F. Right now, it's at 63% yes, 37% no. Proposition F will require people who receive cash benefits to undergo drug screening. If they're found to be using illegal drugs, they'd be mandated to undergo drug treatment if they want to keep their benefits and or their housing. Joe, in that interview we heard with London Breed on Cron 4, she says the people who are supporting this are former drug users. What does the data say? What do advocates say based on your reporting?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is kind of a new group of very vocal people here in San Francisco who are former drug users and have taken a hard line against quote unquote harm reduction, which is kind of any policy that does not compel sobriety or recovery before kind of some sort of treatment. You know, we're trying to make drug users and drug use safer through things like syringe access and safe consumption sites, naloxone, rather than kind of just emphasizing recovery. But those drug users, this new kind of coterie of former drug users has come out very strongly against policies and taken a more punitive approach. And what the advocates say and the actual public health experts say is that this is not helpful. You know, they need more tools, certainly, to address what is a historic enemy in fentanyl, like a truly just physically a much harder drug to address from a public health perspective. But that does not mean that the tools that they've used and the tools that they, you know, have science backing, have facts for, shouldn't be doubled down on here. You know, the kind of public health experts don't think that taking away benefits and kind of subjecting welfare recipients to additional scrutiny will work, namely because drugs change the way people's minds work and people are very likely to then just, you know, lose their benefits and then continue using. And then you just have another problem, which is someone who has less money and is now homeless and on the street and maybe will end up in the ER far more often and cost you far more money.
When will these measures take place? And at what point do you think we'll be able to have a conversation again to look at what effect they've had?
That's a good question, actually. I'm not sure exactly when they're all enacted. But in terms of the conversation, I'm not sure. I mean, it's a delicate election year. A lot is at stake in November. I think for something like Proposition F, you know, that is more visceral. Like I said earlier, Breed could very much get into trouble if one of her moderate opponents or if Aaron Peskin were to jump into the race, him, you know, uses a fatal crash if it happens in the next months against her and just put this all on her. Proposition F, I'm not sure. I mean, something like a drug crisis, that's a slow moving wave. This fentanyl overdose crisis has been with us for years now, and there's not really any indication that it will change substantively in the years to come. So I'm not sure exactly when we'll be able to have a more kind of nuanced conversation about what actually is needed to address this crisis until kind of the tempers flare down there, and that could take some time.
We have a question about Prop F, so let's hear from Harry in San Francisco. Hi, Harry. Thanks for holding. Oh, maybe Harry stopped holding. Are you there, Harry? Well, Harry wanted to know, isn't it going to cost a lot of money and require a lot of people on the job to carry out Proposition F?
That's the other thing, is that it's not really clear how this will be enacted, because at least what all the service providers tell us is that there is just not there are not enough treatment beds currently available for, you know, the current population that needs them. So if you were to start subjecting more people to drug screening and then mandating that treatment, the infrastructure is just not there for that. And so it's also, you know, it seems to be that this will be implemented by the Human Services Agency instead of the Department of Public Health, which kind of raises questions about the kind of treatment model they might use. I mean, there's a lot of open questions here about cost, about what exactly treatment is being offered, what that means, what's on offer here to welfare recipients and drug users. There's a lot of unknowns here.
We have a couple of questions about the future of progressives in San Francisco. Art says, my perception is that we SF progressives don't seem to be as numerous, active, and as well organized as we have in the past. SF conservatives are very well organized thanks to dark money, which has powered their current momentum and recent victories over progressives in San Francisco. Joe writes, bottom line is that the conservative insurgency employed clever tactics and just outworked the incumbent progressives. If progressives want better turnout in a primary and midterm election, we need to get well-publicized ballot measures on the ballot to get voters to the polls. Otherwise, we're going to continue to see conservative outperform SF progressives majority in low turnout election cycles. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
I think there's something there, definitely. I mean, you know, a lot of the political consultants who we spoke to in the last few weeks said that the outcome of the DCCC in particular would be very illustrative for how the moderates are doing in this city, because a race like that, where so far they have total dominance and their slate has kind of swept the board there, it's a very down ballot item. And so really that means that what matters there is door knocking and flyering and kind of just the hard shoe leather work. And they seem to have done that this time. I mean, they were organized, backed by, you know, $2 million of big money donations in that race, and then millions more in other races. Definitely. I mean, no one's discounting the effect of these big money networks, but that money paid for organizers. And now that there's a system there and there's infrastructure there.
Joe Rivenoberos is senior editor at Mission Local. He and his team report more than $11 million was spent on San Francisco's primary. They put together a very important graphic where you just click on someone's name or the organization, and then you can learn more about where the money is coming from and where it's flowing. Joe, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to your team for all of your important reporting.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Well, now we are going to talk about the Senate race in California. Democratic Representative Adam Schiff and Republican Steve Garvey secured the top two spots in the Senate race and will face off in November. Adam Schiff spent more than $12 million on commercials propping up Garvey, according to the Wall Street Journal. We're going to play a couple of clips from each of the candidates from last night, and then we will be joined by David Dayan of the American Prospect. A few minutes after Representative Adam Schiff began last night's victory speech, he was interrupted by Jews for Ceasefire, Jewish Voice for Peace, and allies chanting Ceasefire Now.
You helped us build the biggest grassroots campaign for Senate in California history, and I cannot thank you enough. I want to thank my family. My wife Eve is here tonight. This is my wife Eve. I want to thank you all.
See this, Mary.
Thank you all so much. We
And that is Representative Adam Schiff at last night's Victory Party speech. He was interrupted by Jews for Ceasefire, Jewish Voice for Peace, and Allies. According to that report from ABC LA, he eventually gave up and left the stage. Coming in distant second and third were Katie Porter and Barbara Lee. Here is Representative Barbara Lee, who briefly spoke to reporters last night.
We have to get to public financing the campaigns because, you can see the disparity in the money. I mean, come on. The establishment money doesn't go to a black progressive woman, but we have people and we have low donors, we have recurring donors. We have people who have never donated to campaigns before who believe in our campaign and what we're doing and how we really want to make life better for everyone in California. And who wants peace in the world?
Representative Barbara Lee's loss last night means she will no longer serve in Congress. She did not say what she will do next. Here is Representative Katie Porter talking to her supporters in Long Beach last night.
I think all of us can agree that our government isn't working well for us, for families, for Californians, for workers, for consumers. So many of those in power are too interested in helping other powerful people instead of paying attention to the needs of everyday people. Too many are more interested in being an elected official than in actually doing anything to fix the problems that everyday people face. That's why special interests and billionaires spent close to $20 million attempting to keep me out of the Senate. Special interests and the ultra wealthy, they like politics as it is today because they control the politicians. And like we've seen in this campaign, they spend millions to defeat someone who will dilute their influence and disrupt the status quo.
You can get them, Katie.
I think we scared them.
Representative Katie Porter will no longer serve in Congress. She went on to talk about those who struggle to make ends meet. Joining us to talk about this race is David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect. He writes, the intra-democratic battle kicks off in California. Millionaire self-funders, dirty trick tactics, pro-Israel, and crypto money everywhere. The ideological sparring within the party takes a backseat to campaign shenanigans. Hi, David. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. What are your thoughts about how ceasefire protesters, really led by Jewish people across the country, are just following candidates on a regular basis? Adam Schiff was clearly taken aback when this happened last night. And I just wonder what your thoughts are. Barbara Lee was one of the first politicians to call for a ceasefire, but that didn't translate to more votes for her.
Yeah, I mean, I think it shows you sort of a broken political system statewide here in California, where you really can't win unless you have large sums of money or built-in name recognition. You know, I mean, Adam Schiff was known for being one of the impeachment managers of Donald Trump. He had that. He's practically a co-host on MSNBC. He's on there so much. He was well known across the state. And Barbara Lee is well known in certain progressive circles, but maybe not to every voter. And she was just overwhelmed by the amount of money that Schiff had. Schiff had so much money, he could run two campaigns. He ran his own, but 60% of his ads mentioned Steve Garvey because he wanted to essentially pick his own opponent for November, the easiest one that he thought he could defeat. Garvey ran no ads on his own behalf. He barely campaigned, but he came in second because Adam Schiff repeatedly ran ads, including on Fox News, saying Steve Garvey's too conservative. He voted for Trump twice. He would be very conservative and don't vote for him because he's so conservative. And that was intended, you know, very thinly veiled to get Republicans to consolidate their votes for Steve Garvey. And it worked. It's not illegal. It's cynical. But the answer to it, aside from changing this top two format, would be to change the campaign finance laws so that big money can't just absolutely swamp a message.
What are your thoughts on that, given where we are with the House and the Senate? David, I mean, Adam Schiff had a war chest of $50 million. I got a press release this morning from United Democracy Project. This is an AIPAC-backed super PAC. They said they're proud to contribute $5 million to the pro-Schiff super PAC Standing Strong. I don't even think Barbara Lee had $5 million. So what are your thoughts about the prospect of getting money out of politics at this point?
I mean, it's certainly going to be difficult, but I do want to say, and it's interesting that you bring up the United Democracy Project, who only mentioned that they gave money to Schiff's super PAC after all the votes were counted. They didn't want to actually say it during the race. So they hid their donation until all the votes were counted or all the votes were cast. It's interesting, though, with respect to United Democracy Project, which is AIPAC's super PAC. And that's what that is. The only money that they openly spent in this election cycle was down in Orange County in Katie Porter's old seat, where United Democracy Project spent $5 million running negative ads against a state senator down there named Dave Min, which would try to elevate his Democratic opponent, a woman named Joanna Weiss. And currently, obviously, there's still votes to count, but Dave Min is still ahead by about 7,000 votes on Weiss. So big money doesn't always win. And when in the cold light of day, AIPAC tried to influence an election, so far this year, they lost. So it's not hopeless. But in a state as big as California, with, you know, 39 million people, if you're trying to run statewide, money really does talk. And because of the top two primary, it gives someone like an Adam Schiff, who has that level of money and funding support, the ability to choose his own opponent. And I don't think that's really very good for democracy.
And it's unfortunate, because obviously if we had an Adam Schiff versus Katie Porter or Barbara Lee race, it would be a real race. They would have to talk about the issues. Of course, it would be ugly. There'd be a ton of money. But we would like a real debate. Now that it's going to be Garvey and Adam Schiff, what do you think we can expect over the next 7 months?
Yeah, next to nothing. There won't really be a general election campaign. And Adam Schiff will win. And he'll win fairly easily. The one thing that will be interesting to figure out is how this affects down ballot races, like in the U.S. House, because Democrats are banking on winning back a few seats and then holding some seats in order to flip the House in favor of Democrats in the next Congress. And if you have a snoozer of a race at the top of the ticket with the presidential election, everyone knows who's going to win that. You have a snoozer of a Senate race. Everyone knows who's going to win that. It means that there might not be as much of a draw at the top of the ticket, and that could affect those House races. So I think it was not just a cynical move, but a bit of a selfish move on the part of Adam Schiff. But, you know, he played the rules of the game. He's not the only one to have done this. Gavin Newsom did this 2 years ago, very famously. Even last night, a race out in Los Angeles, an open seat, a man named Gil Cisneros also ran ads for his Republican opponent, saying he was too conservative. And he dragged his opponent into the general election ahead of a Democratic challenger. So, it's a tactic now that is time to sort of battle tested in California politics, that you can do this in the top two primary. So it might make people think, well, why are we doing these top two primaries then?
And I think what's sad about this, David, is I spoke to a couple people yesterday who said, I'm not voting. I'm just tired of the process, which makes you just take a deep breath and try to get them to the polls, although sadly it didn't work. You're down in L.A., right?
Yes.
And L.A. County's preliminary voter turnout is just 16%.
Yeah, which is not surprising. I mean, my personal experience is this was one of the sleepiest elections I've ever seen in this part of the state. I got barely any mailers. Now, I didn't have a city council race in my district. There were certainly pockets of Los Angeles that did have more contested races. But even the very, you know, high profile district attorney election was rather muted here in California. You know, George Cascon, who is the progressive DA currently, was facing several challengers who have, you know, in a way that you're familiar with, I'm sure, in San Francisco, have demonized his progressive reforms. But even that was a relatively muted race. And so, you know, I think that this experiment with the top two primary has really agitated people. Obviously, there wasn't a presidential primary to turn people out either. So that is part of the issue. But the larger issue is we have not figured out how to inspire Californians to get to the polls. And it's something to worry about.
I mentioned this earlier, but you'd find this interesting, David. There's a rent control measure in Larkspur. That's in Marin County, about 20 minutes north of San Francisco or so. Landlords could raise rents by 10%. And a lot of elders in the area said, I just don't have a chance to stay here. So there's a measure that would bring that down to 7%. It is currently ahead by just 8 votes.
8 votes. So, yeah, votes. I mean, every vote counts, right?
Right.
And that'll, I'm sure, change as more votes come in, because as we know in California, because of vote by mail, you only had to postmark your ballot yesterday in order to have it count. So we're going to see votes come in over the next week, and some of these outcomes could change as those votes are counted.
David Dayan is executive editor of The American Prospect. You can find the piece he wrote, The Intra-Democratic Battle Kicks Off in California, at yourcallradio.org. David, thanks for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. We got a couple of emails in response to the sound we played about various groups, Jewish Voice for Peace, for example, shouting ceasefire now at Representative Schiff's victory speech last night. And people said, well, where does he stand on a ceasefire? We had Representative Schiff on our show last week, and he told us he supports a pause. We asked him what that would look like. And if you'd like to know more, given that Adam Schiff will most likely be California's next senator, you can find that interview at yourcallradio.org. Thanks to Savannah Harriman-Pote for producing our show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.